are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
There's no statutory guidance on how schools should apply the Equalities Act, and that's an area that not only affects hair, it affects disability and all areas that come under the Equalities Act.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
2018 marked the centenary of some woman winning the right to vote in the UK. At Teacher Toolkit, we commemorate the anniversary by interviewing 100 women working in the field of education or in the public eye in order to catalogue their lives, celebrate their successes, and find out what challenges they face and discover what they would like to pass on to the next generation.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Michelle DeLeon, founder of World Afro Day and the author of the Hair Equality Report. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are how hair and identity is being suppressed within schools, the joys of creating a successful lesson plan, and why it's a hopeful world for young girls and women.
Hello everyone, this is Ross. You're listening to Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I'm interviewing Michelle DeLeon. Michelle, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them what you do?
Yeah, so my name is Michelle DeLeon and I am the founder of World Afro Day and also author of the Hair Equality Report. And that's my passion project.
Okay, so we're going to come to Afro Day and the hair policy shortly, but can I rewind to your time at school yourself? What's your background and what particular highlights or memories do you have from school?
Yeah, so school was a really interesting journey for me. I had really positive experiences and really negative experiences. So primary school, a lot of institutionalised racism before that word even existed.
Right.
It wasn't recognised, it wasn't understood. It was just I was ignored or mistreated or had racist teachers, to be truthful.
Where did you go to school?
I went to school in posh middle class Barnes,
okay,
Southwest London, and then I went to secondary school in Sheen, which is another sort of middle class area, and I had a great time at secondary school and was treated very well and became head girl. So that's why I've got very kind of extreme experiences.
Okay, and what happened after school? What happened next?
So at school, I was fortunate enough for my dad to kind of give me the idea of working in the media. So I literally, at 14 years old, chose that option. And okay. I pursued that through university. And my first job was in breakfast TV. And I'm still in breakfast television.
Yeah, so I mean, I know you've got a profile for being on the telly and things. So tell us a little bit more about the things that you get involved with your work on various TV channels.
So, I'm a television producer behind the scenes. I work on ITV Good Morning Britain, so involved in sort of daily current affairs and the kind of topics that people are talking about at home. That's very much our agenda. The things that you're going to be talking about at home is what we put on the television.
And you've pretty much worked in television since that young age?
Yep, straight from uni.
So, I'm picking a bit more in terms of what have been the highlights or in your world of work. First of all, describe to me what a typical working week would look like in your media life, if that is possible.
So I work part-time and I go into work quite early, not because it's breakfast show, but because I get in early. It's quite a long journey, so I get into work at 8:30, go through online stuff, go through the papers and see what topics that people might be on people's minds that day or that week, and have an editorial meeting, and then we may put those debates together, looking for guests. And then also I might be working on a long-term project, which actually my project at the moment is back-to-school films. So that's, giving parents tips.
So what ideas, what tips are you recommending?
Oh, my goodness. I'm trying to think of one. I'm still researching them as we speak, so I can't actually reveal what they are yet.
What would your own parents say to you for back to school advice?
Oh my goodness, I don't think we had that sort of thing when I was a kid. We just, you know, I just think we had a great summer. I think what we had was like a real break from school, which we didn't have school projects and homework and that sort of thing. So I really had a sense of, I had a wonderful summer. And then by the time I came back, I was really ready for, you know, with a focused and fresh mind for school.
I would say that that's my memories too. It's interesting, as a parent looking after a child, the homework pressures or things that they're asked to do over the summer, but their memories, I guess, are of, you know, sunshine and pools and ice creams and those types of things. So, Michelle, you work in lots of schools across the UK. Tell me some interesting stories or perceptions of your work in schools.
You know what? I think last year was a big deal because I really wanted to create these lesson plans where I could equip teachers to tackle this subject of care discrimination. And I piloted that at a school in Leeds last year. And it was a real privilege, actually, to kind of, I think I got a bit of what teachers get when you have that privilege of interacting with young minds and seeing how they see the world. And it was really exciting sitting in that first lesson and being in a classroom with a teacher, going through a lesson plan that I'd created, the fact that he could follow the lesson plan clearly, that the children were engaged with the lesson plan, and then there was a creative element at the end where the children had absorbed all the information and they were putting it into a film for themselves to kind of change any issues around hair. And it was a couple of weeks later that they gave me the feedback from those children and what they'd written, and it blew me away. These were children who, it wasn't the children with Afro hair, but it was the children who had learnt something about what it was like to go through life feeling that you're not valued or you look different and people don't respect you. And these children, they were so empathetic and they were so moved by what they'd heard, and it moved me. And I just felt, gosh, I'm on the right track if I can get children who know nothing about a subject to feel empowered. So in one lesson, I just felt that I felt positive. I felt proud that I was on the right lines.
So let's rewind a bit back from the lesson plan. How did World Afro Day come about?
So, because I'm a parent and I have a child who was probably about, I don't know, 8 or something at the time, and she was singing in the bathroom about how much she loved her hair. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. I never felt that good about myself at that age. And actually, I remember her petitioning me as a young child, "Mummy, please let me wear my hair out in an afro. Let me wear my hair out." And I'm like, oh, goodness. In the middle of the week, I didn't want the hassle, really.
Yeah.
But she really petitioned me for 2 weeks that she really wanted to wear her hair out. And I thought, wow, gosh, she feels so positive about her hair. And I just thought, actually, I knew so many other, probably millions of children around the world don't feel that good. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted all kids to feel that good.
So when did it, what year was this?
I launched it in 2017.
Uh-huh.
And we got it endorsed by the United Nations Office of High Commissioner for Human Rights. And we wanted to do a world record lesson. So that's what we aimed to do.
Yeah.
Because there weren't any world records around kids coming together and celebrating hair. So we thought, oh, let's get kids of all backgrounds together in one place, learning and being really positive and celebratory together. So that's what we did year one.
So I remember when we caught up back at the BAMED event at University East London back in January, and you did a quiz about hair. So for our listeners, could you just pose a question with some possibilities? There was one question, I think, what was the strongest, I think, Afro hair or something like that, I vaguely remember.
Okay, so, what is the strongest type of hair? And a lot of people think it's Afro hair. And I don't know if that's just because in terms of impact, it has a strong image, but it's actually the most delicate, vulnerable type of hair.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a lot of people's perceptions maybe with dreadlocks, that it appears to look quite thick and quite strong, I suppose. But as you said, I guess looking at the molecular structure of Afro hair, like you said, it's quite weak. So I guess going back to this lesson plan, what does the lesson plan now look like for kids? Does it talk about those types of perceptions?
It talks, I think, a lot about what's going wrong in society in terms of the perception of hair, so the position of law and what it means to be treated equally. So it helps people understand what it means to be treated equally, and that doesn't mean treating every child the same, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing about that. And it gets children to research. So there's some historical research that gets done. We ask children to look at ancient African hairstyles, and I also ask them to look at, for example, when did cornrows first exist? And they find out that it's 3000 BC. That's eye-opening for them, that it's the same hairstyle you're seeing today actually dates back 3000 BC. So that's, especially when it's being considered some even teachers think of it as some sort of gang hairstyle, but it clearly isn't.
Yeah. And the lesson plan, have you designed it for kind of key stage one, age four, or is it pitched towards key stage two and three level?
So I would say 10 and above, okay. And it doesn't use all the UK terminology because it is a world lesson plan. So if you're in Germany, if you're in America, if you're in the Caribbean, if you're in Africa, we want everyone to be able to pick this up and not be working their way around terminology.
Okay.
So I would say 10 and above.
And what's the engagement so far with people around the world?
With World Africa Day, it's interesting. So we literally had people, from New Zealand downloading it last year. The UK mostly, because of World Africa Day is based here, but the awareness is raising around the world. So we've had thousands, millions of views around the world, and that is, it's just starting, but that's key. That it is, I think it's almost like the brand, the awareness of the brand that the day exists, and then once you're aware of the day, you think, oh, what's it all about? And then you find out more.
Yeah, and then the hair policy, how did that come to fruition?
So hair policy, so we did, what you must know from being a teacher, that almost every school has their own policy.
Yeah.
There is no kind of way of, there is no guidance, and that's a legal situation as well. I took some legal advice, and the lawyer basically said there's no statutory guidance on how schools should apply the Equalities Act, and that's an area that not only affects hair, it affects disability and all areas that come under the Equalities Act. So we need it to be addressed for the fact that the Equalities Act is a huge thing that should be given clear guidance within schools.
And I know we've talked about before, and certainly I've written about it, is children being excluded for their hair, whether it's a different colour, a short length, or dare I say an afro. We know these things exist. What are your thoughts?
So I think the crux of this year is really why the Big Hair Assembly exists, to actually remove, change, adapt, update every policy that is discriminatory. The fact is, they're unlawful. There's clear protection for hair under the Equalities Act, and unfortunately too many schools are applying it unlawfully. And maybe it's not their fault. Maybe it's the fact that they aren't given statutory guidance around this. But either way, it's an area that needs to change, and change quickly.
Yeah. My favourite question in a time where teachers are now seeking evidence is, where is the evidence to suggest that having short hair impacts on how you learn? And I'm still waiting for any concrete evidence to say that if you have short hair, and I guess in my case, having a bald head, now studying for a PhD, you kind of have to ask yourselves, why do we have these types of silly things going on? I'm going to steer our focus towards, we talked about just before we came on air about our Women Ed focus.
Yes.
What are your, you know, your own childhood, going through school, you've already explained, being a parent for daughter, wanting to raise a profile or wear her hair. Give me your general feelings or thoughts about being a woman today in British society.
I think it's a great time to be a woman. I've been really inspired about being a woman today. I think raising a woman today is inspiring because I don't feel any limits when I talk to my daughter about being a woman. I actually feel that she's got a great deal. I know there might be barriers or obstacles out there, but the fact is women have been overcoming barriers and obstacles for, you know, millennia. So a woman can, you know, get out there and actually create something that can impact not only herself, but, you know, the world, like I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And what advice would you pass on to, or what advice would you hope your daughter might pass on to her children?
Oh, that's a tricky one. That there's no limitations. I think that's the reality for, you know, the 100 years ago when women were trying to get a vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a case of there aren't any limitations. And then if there are limitations, I think women are going to just create, you know, a way to get around whatever the limitations are.
Yeah, and I guess if we think of Afro and female, and particularly whether it's in the UK or let's say maybe culturally speaking from another country, what perceptions or barriers still might face a black woman with Afro hair, whether it's in England or Jamaica or Nigeria? What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question, Ross, because actually that barrier does still exist. It's a barrier that's been there hundreds of years, to say that a woman who's professional or a woman who's attractive should have straight hair. It's a perception held all over the world. So in terms of what I've got to do and my daughter's got to do, I'm hoping it will be in our lifetime, really.
Yeah.
That perception or this idea that you're not going to be treated well or accepted as being good at your job simply because if you have an Afro hair or hairstyles or braids or whatever the hairstyles, I mean, that's a ridiculous limitation on a woman, to be honest. It is, and that has to go. So I'm hoping women who, with whatever hairstyles they have, just join together as women and say, we don't want to be judged.
Yeah, no, I would imagine, again, I'm very naive to this, but my assumption would be that there are still stereotypes where if I'm a black woman with an Afro and I want to wear it out how it should be worn, I turn up to maybe a traditional workplace. I would plead innocence here because I've not had to deal with that, but I'm assuming either in your own life or friends that they might have been told to wear their hair differently. Is that the case?
Yeah, that definitely is the case. But,
have you got a personal example?
Has it happened to me? It hasn't happened to me. I work in the media, more liberal.
Yeah.
To be honest, I made the decision that my hair was never going to be compromised. I actually knew from my perspective that I wasn't going to be told to change my hair or wear my hair differently. And I think ultimately, if you start out with that premise that actually I won't accept being told, it may never happen to you because maybe that's the position you've taken.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's lots of women who don't yet feel confident to have that position.
Yeah. And, you know, if we think back 100 years ago when the woman won the right to vote and we're 100 years later in the UK, what does that mean to you in terms of women's rights and where we are today?
Right. I don't know about the right. I always feel very sort of emotive when I look back at that time. And I wish that society would just learn the lessons. You know, women had to throw themselves under horses just to be treated equally. And I just think we can we can learn. No one should have to be fight to be treated equally anymore. We should have learned so much more. You know, the fact that we have to fight to stop children being penalised at school because of their hair shows that, well, actually, we're not learning the same lessons. You know, equality is treating people with respect on their own terms.
I had the pleasure of interviewing on the podcast, which will come out shortly, Sean Delenty, who is a campaigner for equal rights in terms of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and Sean going through his own battles as a child, almost on the brink of suicide and things, where he said a very powerful thing to me, that when people enter the world of education, they go with the intention to support all students. But when perhaps even teachers deny the rights of all children because they only promote some children. So you look on the television last night, there was the Birmingham No Outsiders programme that was on, where certain parents don't want children to be taught that some kids might grow up with two dads or two mums. I think it's quite an important thing that, you know, equality, we've got a lot of work to do, but I think including hair, and particularly when you still see stories of kids getting excluded, we still have quite a bit of work to do. What would you hope in the next 2 or 3 years where Afro Day would be?
I would hope to be that the policies that the Department of Education realises that schools need guidance, and that any hair policies that are discriminatory would have been removed at that point, and we'll be talking about just embedding it into our education so that it's not all separate, that actually...
Yeah.
Do you know what's really interesting, Ross, I've learned recently, is that the social work side of the government learned these lessons quite a while ago. So when black children and mixed-race children were being adopted into the care system,
yeah,
and their cultural heritage were being ignored, there were reports upon reports writing about the fact that children ended up trying to go into the bath and bleach themselves because their own heritage was not being valued on any level.
Yeah.
So the fact that all those reports already exist, the evidence is already there through social work, that you have to value a child's intrinsic identity. I'm not sure why it didn't sort of cross over into the education system, because care is part of the education system.
Yeah, it's I recall watching one of Davina McCall's programs, Find Your Family, or whatever it's called, only a couple of weeks ago, and there was a couple of ladies who trace back to, it must have been in 50s or 60s Britain, where mixed race relationships were hidden or not allowed. Mm. And these children were adopted, and 50 or 60 years later they trace back their families and their heritage, and you could see the emotion and the burden of a lifetime. And I imagine there's thousands of people in Britain today who have similar stories. I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions, Michelle, to put you on the spot, so be prepared. So thanks for all your thoughts on that. Very interesting topics on Afro Day and hair policy, and I wish you luck with all that. So here we go. What project are you working on right now?
Back to school.
Back to school. Okay. What book are you reading for pleasure?
Oh, don't touch my hair. Bit of a theme here.
Okay, who's it by?
It's by Emma Dabiri.
Okay. If you weren't working on the telly, what would you be doing instead?
World Afro Day full time.
Okay. who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Oh my goodness. That's a tricky one. I think there's that woman, and I can't remember her name, she does a lot around sort of immigrant rights. I'll have to get that name for you.
Yeah.
Because I just feel that, yeah, that the whole immigrant thing is such a... I think if anyone really... I think we all should need to read a book about the immigrant experience. You know, when you literally had to leave your whole life behind and rebuild a new...
Yeah.
Life in a new country. I just think we've just got a lot to learn on empathy.
Yeah, absolutely. I've really enjoyed reading Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race, probably one of the best books I've read in my life. And I've got Natives by Akala to get through this summer. And I'm really enjoying unpicking another world for me, I guess my own background, and also, I guess, the immigrant story. I'm trying to understand the challenges that people have gone through, and plus the thousands of kids that I've taught actually in my career that I've known, they've either come from refugees, asylum type places where you can be aware as a teacher, but not really understand their journey. So, give me the name of that person, and we'll put it in the podcast.
I think the other person to do is the book White Fragility.
Yes.
Yeah. Have you read it yet?
I haven't yet. No, it's on my list. I've got to get through Natives as well as all my education books, and then I'm going to get onto that one next. Yeah. If you had a dinner party tonight, which three women, dead or alive, would you invite?
Harriet Tubman.
Okay.
The woman who's written White Fragility, because I think she's a really interesting person. Oh, and you know what? I would like Dia Khan. Dia is amazing. She's a Muslim woman who left her country, made her home in Britain, and she did some documentaries about the far right.
Right.
And also did a documentary about honour killings.
Okay.
She's just fantastic.
And I've just done a quick check. It's Robin DiAngelo.
Yay. Definitely do her.
Yeah. That'd be interesting dinner. What would be on the menu?
Oh, not jerk rice.
Right.
probably some king prawns. I quite like vegan lasagna at the moment.
Right, okay.
It would be a hot bit vegan lasagna. What else? Not sure what else. Okay. Like cassava fries at the moment.
All right, okay, interesting. And what would your daughter say was your typical catchphrase or favourite saying?
Oh my gosh. What would she say? is my saying.
Or what would your mother say to you? What's the word, pearls of wisdom that have been passed on?
I suppose be yourself.
Yeah.
I remember my dad always used to say to me, don't follow anybody else. Be yourself.
Good. Thanks for your time, Michelle. Last question. Where can listeners find out more about you, World Afro Day, any books, blogs, those types of things?
Yeah, so everything is worldafroday.com, and social platforms are at World Afro Day, all one word.
Right, well, thank you for your time. Good luck. I'm a big fan of World Afro Day, and I can really see it's going to start to move places. Been watching it closely the last couple of years. And I hope, how many schools have we got using it so far? Do we know?
No, I don't know off the top of my head. I know that 40 have signed up for the big hair assembly. So, I'd love to get that to 100. That would be great.
Well, let's see if we can get something to 100 by October half term. I wish you all the luck. Thanks for such an engaging topic. Certainly challenging myself. And I hope it inspires others to get involved with World Afro Day. Thank you for your time, Michelle.
Thanks so much.
I shall speak to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, bye.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to Teacher Toolkit. You can find out more about 100 Years, 100 Women on our website, teachertoolkit.co.uk, or follow us on social media using the hashtag TTKit100Women.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.